This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit this fine, is it Monday, September 9th? I believe it is. And we have a show on FERCA. I have to say that slowly. And we have the FERCA expert, Bob Braunstein, with us this morning. Bob?
How are you, sir? I am here. I wish I could be there in person, but I'm glad to be here disembodied nevertheless.
All right. Well, you sound in person. So, Bob, when you say FERCA, people, what are you saying? What is FERCA? What do the initials stand for? And then who would be interested in knowing that they may or may not qualify to be covered under FERCA?
All excellent questions, sir. What FERCA stands for is the Federal Erroneous Retirement Coverage Corrections Act. That's a mouthful. But it's a special set of rules that cover people who happen to be in the wrong retirement coverage. You know, there are three general types of retirement coverage at this point in time, notwithstanding some agencies that have their own. But the basic retirement is either the civil service retirement system or the FERS retirement system. And in between them both is something called civil service retirement system offset. Those are the primary coverage that you see. And every now and again, somebody winds up in the wrong plan. It was determined that if you're in the wrong plan for a considerable period of time, defined as more than 3 years, then your retirement assumptions, what you think you're going to get in a pension, what your TSP may contain, whether or not you will get Social Security, all of these things tend to get turned on their head, and you need to rethink where you might be. And in situations like that, this particular law, this act, provides a number of special dispensations and considerations that helps you, number one, plan, pick the correct plan or the one that's best for you, and it helps you navigate quite a bit of stuff, with agencies largely fitting the bill for most of your counseling.
Okay.
Yeah. So how did I wind up in the wrong plan is probably what you're thinking.
Yeah, so a shorter story, long or longer story short, somebody that was put into the incorrect retirement plan when they joined, as well as somebody that's listening to the show going, what? I know somebody like that, or maybe they know somebody like that. So you've been doing this for a fair number of years. So where's the most... I would say popular spot where somebody is eligible for this but isn't aware of this. I mean, how would anybody even know other than listening to the show every week?
Well, you know, many times people don't even find out about it until they're about ready to retire or if they're coming back to federal service having been a federal employee at one point in time and they're being reappointed. There could be any number of reasons why a human resources activity associated with an agency might be looking at your official personnel file. That's usually when errors are disclosed. Let me backtrack a little bit. There was a time when there was only one retirement system. The civil service retirement system began long, long time ago, even before you and I were born. That's hard to believe.
Oh, my goodness.
1920. And it went merrily along. This was actually 15 years before Social Security began. So the CSRS program actually opted out of Social Security in 1935 and remained the only plan primarily until the year 1983. Now, in 1983, in an effort to bring feds and a number of other groups under Social Security, an amendment act was passed, Social Security Amendment Act in 1983, that, to keep it simple, that said if you're coming to your first permanent, you know, real job, a job covered by retirement, in the civil service, in the federal service, you have to pay Social Security. You're going to have to start paying Social Security. And people who came on board in their first permanent job after 1983 started paying Social Security. Now, in 1987, a new plan was developed called FERS. Anyone who came to their first permanent job after 1983, and this might have been before FERS, was eventually converted to FERS on 1987 because, you know, their first permanent job was after 1983. Some people came back to federal service with, say, less than 5 years of credible service, and they were put in FERS. Some people were put in the wrong retirement plan because a careful review of where they should have been and where they came from wasn't done. For example, let's say I came to federal service in 1983 in October, and I was hired under CSRS. And then I was converted to FERS on January 1st, 1987, because I didn't have 5 years of service. The mistake made there is the fact that I had CSRS coverage. I didn't need to have 5 years of service. Whereas someone who had 5 years of service and maybe didn't have their first permanent job, one covered by retirement until 1984, wasn't CSRS, but they couldn't be put in FERS either because they had a choice between something called CSRS offset and FERS. Very, very complicated landscape. There were many, many rules. I think probably the best thing, just to set this up, let me just give you a few pointers on where you should be. The civil service retirement system, if you were originally hired prior to January 1st, 1984, in CSRS, you have no breaks in service that are longer than a year, and you didn't elect FERS coverage. Because the CSRSers had an opportunity to elect FERS coverage. This was in 1987, again in 1998. So you should be CSRS. CSRS offset. Generally, if you were originally hired in a CSRS-covered position, and if your service totals 5 years or more as of December 31st, 1986, that's just before FERS, but you took a service break, you left federal service for more than a year. When you come back, you're put in this offset program, which is CSRS and offset. And there's another way you can be offset too, but I don't want to get too confusing here. And then generally speaking, you are in FERS if you were first hired on or after January 1, 1984, in federal civilian service. There are a number of other ways that you can wind up in these coverages, but that's basically it. If your first federal job, civilian, was January 1, 84 or later, your CSRS, if you were hired prior to that date and didn't have a service break that lasted more than a year, that's where you should be.
Okay. Now, everything you told us is spot on. But if I'm listening, and I understand the federal employment sector or whatnot, what is there a single most question that they should ask themselves or a friend of theirs that after what you just so eloquently defined is to say, did you know that there's this thing called FERCA, and I think I understand it, but you ought to listen to the show. Is there something that's a bullseye to throw out?
I really think there is. I mean, anyone who just heard where they should be, if you believe for a moment that you haven't been in the right plan, and this has been going on for years, more than 3 years, it's worth your while to pursue the options made available to you, because this coverage error is going to give you, in most situations, a choice. For example, if I was in CSRS by mistake, if I should have been in FERS, and you and I have been down this road with someone before, Bob, we'll go back on his case in a moment, then for the entire time that I was CSRS, at least at the initial stages of FERS, they have something called the Thrift Savings Plan. The FERS people were allowed to put in 10% of their compensation, of their income. And this is the initial stages of the plan. CSRS people in the same initial stages of FERS who weren't in FERS still had access to TSP but could only put in 5%. The people on the FERS side were always getting that match. They get 1% of their salary automatically by the government, a dollar-for-dollar match of the first 3% of salary they contribute to TSP, and then 50 cents on the dollar for the next 2%. And that's always been the case. So here I am, a CSRS person who all the way back to 1987 should have been in FERS. And I'm looking back and thinking, wow, I've got this nice big pension under CSRS. It wouldn't be as big under FERS, but they're telling me that now I have a choice between FERS and something called CSRS offset, which is a combination of Social Security and CSRS. But most important in my situation is that I have a chance to go back and make up the extra contributions I could have made to TSP had I been FERS, as well as get the matching money that would have been given to me as a FERS employee on my TSP. And all of that's going to get interest compounded against a special formula in these cases. I could very well see my TSP account, which is respectable, a couple hundred thousand bucks, mushroom to maybe $1 million because of these makeup contributions, which might only be $30,000 or $40,000. I mean, think of that return on investment, $30,000 or $40,000 into TSP in the form of makeup contributions. These aren't catch up, not the ones that you do at 50 or older. These are payments I could have made to TSP had they put me in the right plan to begin with that I never was able to do. So now I get a chance to go back and do those, get the interest on them as well as the agency contributions, and get the interest on those, and I have this gigantic TSP account. Now, you're the financial guy, Bob, so I'm going to put this question to you. I mean, I'm looking at an annuity under FERS that's probably going to be 54-55% of what CSRS would be if I make this change. But then I'm also taking my, say, $200,000 TSP and doing the $30,000 worth of makeups, and I can do this between now and the time I retire, and that's going to take my current balance from $200,000 to $1 million in TSP. What would you do?
Okay, let's say we have the proverbial $1 million, and we're talking about a TSP millionaire here, so this is not way out. We're not talking about somebody with $1 million in their savings account outside of a retirement plan. And let's say somebody takes out 3% a year. Now, I'm going to ignore inflation just for a millisecond, but 3% of $1 million is $30,000. Now, would that cover the gap between what we would have received had we been CSRS and what we are going to get because we're FERS, in your example?
I believe it would for a couple of reasons. The FERS pension, particularly for those who were hired, you know, a while ago, there were some changes in what they have to contribute in 2013 and 2014 every 2 weeks for the pension amount. But the FERS pension, by and large, is about 53 to 54% the size of CSRS. So it's a little bit more than half. And then what you're talking about is getting $30,000 more a year. And then don't forget, somebody in FERS is also contributing to Social Security. And that can make up a good 20, 25, maybe even 30% of active employment income. So when you look at that three-pronged system, a three-legged stool, as it's called, the FERS pension, Social Security, and now an extremely large TSP balance simply by doing these makeup contributions. That I think you may even, in these situations, you will often wind up with more than 100% of your active employment income as a retiree.
So what we're saying with it, and I'll back off of my 3% of X dollars and the like, there's going to be a significant benefit to apply for this, or the listeners that aren't covered or could benefit from this may have friends that could. And again, your example, if the TSP then is refreshed, if you will, for a dollar amount plus the earnings over that period of time, it's a guaranteed no loss. And a TSP you don't have to touch if you want to take Social Security first, or you take the money out of the TSP to fund you until you maximize your Social Security income. And what I'm saying is you pretty much can do whatever you want with that TSP until age 70 and a half, where they require, some people say they make you take money out of it. It's called a required minimum distribution, which is a flowered way to say 3.65% in the first year it's got to come out. And you have to take it out. Why? I mean, it's pretty gross, but they want to tax you before you leave this good earth. And that's why it's there. So to me, you know, I'm kind of a financial type, and this isn't under the microscope finances. It says, gee, if I did this, I get this, depending on my life expectancy. If it's robust, I'm covered. If there is a short life expectancy, it would be a significant amount going to the heirs. So, and again, I'm doing this not knowing anybody that's listening these numbers. It's just a way to get us thinking. And
Absolutely.
Eric, the ever-present engineer, is saying, it's time to take a break, guys. So, Bob, we'll catch up together after the break.
Civilian federal employees. For a limited time only, WEPA is offering $100,000 in group term life insurance coverage guaranteed. There is no medical underwriting required, and your coverage is guaranteed. If you're a civilian federal employee under the age of 50 and not currently insured with WEPA, you're eligible for $100,000 in coverage regardless of your health history. As a Fed, you're likely familiar with the federal life insurance program FEGLI. Coverage from WEPA costs up to 89% less and is fully portable if you leave federal service or retire. Life insurance from WEPA can be used as a supplement or replacement to your existing FEGLI coverage. Civilian Feds must apply for this limited-time offer before October 18, 2019. Visit waepa.org/100K to learn more. That's waepa.org/100K.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today talking about FERCA, and we're talking about that with Bob Braunstein, federal benefits expert. Good guy, and he's able to put, I would say, complex, and this is complex, discussion so that everybody would understand that either maybe they, I won't say the majority of the listeners or even 20% of the listeners are going to qualify for this, but they might know somebody who does. So it certainly is worth one of the shows that we do, and we're happy to do it. So, Bob, prior to the break, we talked about who might qualify. We talked roughly about some the economic benefit of it. Somebody has to make that decision. And in your classes over the last however many years, and you've been doing this a while, do you get people saying, oh, my goodness, that's me, or I think I know somebody like that? And they probably come up to you at the break and talk to you. Is it? I assume it's sometime. It certainly isn't every one of them.
Definitely happens occasionally. Not nearly as much as it used to, because most of these mistakes have pretty much been found. Actually, if there's an error in retirement coverage that's fixed pretty quickly, within less than 3 years, this act doesn't even apply. But every now and again, I come up to somebody and he'll say that, I think I'm in the wrong plan. And I go over it with them. And sure enough, they were hired prior to 1984 and had a small service break and then came back to work, say, maybe 6 months into the year 1987. And they were put in FERS by mistake, but they should have been CSRS. There are like seven different errors that could happen. FERS should be CSRS. CSRS should be FERS. CSRS offset should be FERS, any number of things like that. There's at least seven of these scenarios give people an option to choose a plan. And the plan choice is typically between FERS and CSRS offset. Now, CSRS offset is a combination of the old plan, but you're paying into Social Security as well. There's no matching on your TSP, but you wind up getting a substantial Social Security benefit that your CSRS counterparts don't get. But then there is an offset, essentially, to your pension by virtue of the Social Security when you become eligible for it. It's too complex to talk about, but those are the things that typically give people options to make a choice. Now, it's worth their while to at least look at it, because number one, under FERCA, because it's so important to get your retirement planning correct, and because you've been under false assumptions for perhaps years and years, having been in the wrong plan, you're given 6 months by the agency that finds the mistake to consider your options. And included in this is some fairly substantial and I'd say pithy, to use a better term, counseling about what plan is, what each plan is worth. In other words, if I take CSRS offset, that's one of my choices. What are the benefits there? Well, I'm going to get a bigger pension. My Social Security is otherwise going to be the same. It would have been the same under FERS as it is here. But then I'm not going to get that matching money in my TSP. That's all going to have to come out in lieu of this greater pension. Or what we were talking about before. And these things are complex, and you need to kind of look at it from a benefits perspective as well as a financial perspective. And all of this is done through counseling, through people who know the work, understand it, like myself, like you, on the financial side. And the agency, sorry about that, the agency that finds a mistake is responsible for opening all of this up to the affected employee, and they can sit down with these folks. And the costs associated with this type of counseling are borne by the agency. There are a number of great dispensations that FERCA will offer that are different than regular retirement rules. For example, and you know this, there's something called temporary federal civilian service, which typically infers you can't, in order to make this count for retirement, you can make a deposit for it. But infers in most situations, if it happens after 1988, you can't do anything with that. It's just service that won't count toward retirement. But in FERCA, you know, assuming that the coverage error happened after this particular temporary service, you actually have an opportunity to make a deposit for it. There's some service in CSRS that requires a deposit of all of the money associated with the temporary service up front, or it won't count in your annuity. But under FERCA, you can accept an actuarial reduction for it. Military deposits, which, you know, could very well require a lot of money up front, can be actuarialized. In other words, you don't have to pay it. It's still going to count. But then they take a small reduction to your annuity in lieu of getting all of this money up front. And FERCA allows this because of, you know, the longstanding error and the fact it would be a tremendous hardship for you to come out of pocket $25,000, $30,000 to bring this service into your retirement plan. All of these unique criteria, hard to learn, are usually embodied in the knowledge of a FERCA counselor who works together with the employee, and the employee works with their financial planner, and they sit down over a period of 6 months and have an opportunity to choose what the better of two options happens to be. So it's always worth your while to go through the process. Even if you're going to leave everything the same, at least you see where you could have been, which you may evaluate as not being as good as where you are, or it could be the other way around.
Seems to me, after listening to you very closely, somebody at worst, which would be at best, if there wasn't the funds to put it in, they could borrow an amount to meet that cash up front, if you will, to join the club. And then with the additional income that's going to be spun off from that, pay the loan down over a period of time. So
absolutely,
you know, the ability to get the money should not be that hard, unless somebody has maybe really bad credit. I suppose you could even borrow from the thrift. Could you do that, Bob?
Well, I would probably ask you that same question. if you could do that. Idea being that you're not going to pay any interest on it. You're not going to pay any penalties, and as long as the balance of the loan is paid before you retire, there's no taxable distribution before you retire. So, you know, again, how one uses their thrift savings, I'd rely more on a financial planner's advice. But if you think that's a good thing, I mean, what I think would be a great thing to do is, if I were an individual, for example, who was evaluating this, and I can see that if I had been in FERS, this is going back to that first thing we talked about, let's just say the makeup contributions that I could have made since all the way back to 1987, I mean, that's how far this thing goes back, that extra 5% that I could have been putting in during the years when TSP was limited to 10% for FERS and 5% for CSRS, the 5% match that I missed and everything else, I'm being told that's going to take my $150,000, which I've, you know, just been sparingly put in there as a CSRS person. It's going to make it worth $800,000. And in order for me to do that, it's guaranteed to be $800,000 if between now, they just found the error, and the time I retire, which we'll say is 6 years away, I pay 30 grand. That's all the makeup I have to make to essentially elevate my 150,000 to 800,000. So on 30 grand, I'm going to get a return of $650,000. I don't know where you get that kind of return on investment anywhere. I would go to my credit union and make sure they understood all of this and said, look, this is what my return on investment is going to be. Can I get a loan from you folks in order to make this happen? And I can't imagine that it would be turned down just by virtue of the guaranteed boost in income to this individual.
You got it. I suppose if the individual got the money from the thrift and then was to pay the money back, it's got to be automatic. So there can't be a stopgap there, I don't think. Otherwise,
sure.
Yeah. So
think about this too, Bob. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
In your classes, do you ever get people that say, I think I have a friend that qualifies for this? And let's just say that the answer is no. But what triggered them to ask that question? I'd imagine everyone that asks you this question, you don't say yes to. You have to meet certain tests. But is there a common
trigger,
misconception? Go ahead.
Well, the typical trigger is at the onset of all of our retirement classes, and all of the benefit speakers basically go through a general history of retirement. And there's a little bit of a chart, like a linear bar graph. It's a line. It says, here's where CSRS started. Here was the change in landscape in 1983 with the passage of the Amendment Act, Social Security Amendment Act. Here's when FERS began, 1987. And then we say, now, if your first permanent federal appointment was before 1983, and you had no service breaks that were more than a year, then you're CSRS, unless you elected to be in FERS coverage in 1987 or one other opportunity in 1998. If you were hired on or after January 1st, 1984, then you're in FERS. Even though FERS didn't exist until 1987, you were in this interim program called CSRS Interim, and then you were converted to FERS automatically with no choice, and you got a refund of some excess retirement contributions because FERS didn't at that time take out as much, and they still don't. And then, of course, the real nebulous situations is, you know, maybe you started working as a temporary in the Federal Civilian Service, and on January 1st, 1987, even though your first permanent job was after 1983, you had five potentially creditable years of service. I mean, in those situations, you should be CSRS offset with an option to have elected FERS within 6 months. We talk about all of these things, and as people hear it, that I get people who come up to me and say, wait a minute, you know, I was hired before FERS, but I was hired in 1985. I will say, well, you're still in FERS because your first permanent federal job was after 1983. And then somebody will come up to me and say, well, I was actually hired in 1982, but I worked in temporary jobs for a number of years. The difference between a temporary civilian job in the federal service and a permanent one is you're not paying into the retirement system in a temporary job. These jobs typically have a one-year fuse on them, a year or less, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months. And you pay Social Security, but you don't pay into retirement. Let's just say a person had a total of 5 civilian years before FERS, but their first permanent job wasn't until after 1983. You know, sometimes these folks think they should be CSRS, but the critical thing is that their first permanent job was after 1983. And I'll tell them, and they're in FERS. They could very well have a retirement coverage error. And then the thing that people tend to forget, and I would forget it too, is that they signed a document years ago saying, I opt to be in FERS. People signed those documents, don't even remember doing it. And yet they think they're in the wrong retirement plan because they're in FERS and they're hearing what I'm saying, but they forgot that they made a FERS election in 1987. So it's typically the history of the retirement system that triggers in the minds of the people who attend these classes that, wait a minute, you know, I'm hearing this, and I think that by virtue of when I came on board, I should be under the old retirement plan, but I'm under FERS. I don't remember making that election. And maybe they didn't. And that's when we find these mistakes.
So if in your classes, you would probably, before you bring this up, gauge the visual age of the participants, right? Because some of them are just going to be too young, I would assume.
Absolutely.
Okay. So if you see maybe a class where more than half may or may not be, over the years, would you say many people go, and of course you don't know what's going to happen after class, but they say, I'm going to follow up on that, or I have a friend to follow up. So, I mean, today's show, it's on podcast as well, so people will listen to it after the live version. It's probably, you know, not a bad question to ask somebody that visually might look like they qualify for this.
No, definitely not a bad question at all. You know, it's interesting that you raised this. One of the first things I do is I poll the class. You know, if you're looking at a mid-career class, those people are all in FERS. Because mid-career, you got 10, 15 years. I mean, a lot of these people were hired in the late 90s, early 2000s, maybe even after that. And their correct coverage should be FERS in almost all situations. In the classes that I present to where there is still a possibility of an error, it's where you have people in all the retirement groups, a lot of CSRSers, well, as many as there can be. There aren't that many left. Most of them are retired like me. And people who came to work in the mid-80s, early 80s. And I take a reading. I find out how many are CSRS, how many are offset. I find out, you know, I verify that the offset person is a person who started under the old CSRS plan, had a break of more than a year, and then came back after 1983, and that's usually the case. Like I said, there are a few other ways you can be CSRS offset, and then I check the FERS folks. And in most situations, like I say, it's extremely rare these days that you're going to find FERCA errors. And a FERCA error, by definition, is a retirement coverage error that is ruminated for more than 3 years when the agency finds it. Those errors that are found within that three-year period and corrected don't fall under FERCA. But when we take that polling, and it's typically in the classes where people are about to retire, people who are either eligible or would be eligible in a year, if there's going to be any chance at all of finding a coverage error, it's going to be in that forum as opposed to mid-career and new hires.
Okay. So these folks that we're talking about now, there's another group of people in CSRS and CSRS offset, as long as we're talking about benefits that they might not be aware of, is the Voluntary Contribution Program, which has absolutely nothing to do with FERCA, but could have the same type of reward. So when you talk to your classes, it's not everybody that's in there that's CSRS. We do some CSRS-only classes, and when you talk about it, they go, the voluntary what? So it's another one of those provisions. Maybe we'll take some time with it after the break. But I think it's probably a good time to take a break because Eric is saying it's time, guys. So please, everybody, stay tuned, and we'll be back in a minute or so.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today with Bob Braunstein, federal benefits expert, talking about FERCA and some other programs that people may or may not be aware that they're entitled to. And I was actually listening to the public service announcement, or we could call it a commercial, but we don't sell anything. So as a company, we've never sold anything for 35 years. We never will. We present retirement seminars to federal agencies. Now, the agency does pay for it, but there's no cost to go. And if you can sign up, you should. Anyway, where were we, Bob? I got off on the voluntary contribution. I don't need to go there, but that's oftentimes a little known benefit.
Actually, I'd like to go there, Bob. I think that's an interesting wrinkle to all of this. I mean, let's just say I was a FERS employee, and I found that I could be CSRS offset. And I'm looking at the pros and cons. Maybe here's a pro I haven't thought of. As a FERS employee, I'm not allowed to do these voluntary contributions that you're speaking of. And to define what those are, under the old plan, and in any given pay period, you were always allowed to contribute more to your retirement, meaning the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. In addition, CSRS, to the 7% that comes out of your check, you were allowed to put in 10% more. And what people did back in the day is they put in more and they were able to get another annuity check. But let's say you're sitting on the threshold of retirement, and if you go back miraculously, twilight zones, like you've never been FERS, and you're now CSRS offset, and you have Social Security. Yes, you're giving up some of the matching money in TSP, but you could now, if you could find the wherewithal, make a one-time contribution of voluntary contributions to CSRS. Now, mind you, this is your entire career, 10%. And let's say, you know, you made a couple million bucks as a Fed under CSRS. You'd have the opportunity, if you could find the money, to put $200,000, that's 10% of your federal earnings, into voluntary contributions. Now, voluntary contributions, you know more about this than I do. Those are technically eligible for a rollover into an IRA. And what if I did that and I rolled it into a Roth IRA? Would that be beneficial?
It would be beneficial, but what we did is we put X dollars in there, whether it's $50,000, whether it's $200,000, whether it's $10,000. The dollar amount doesn't much make any difference. So when the money goes into this program, there's no tax benefit. There's no tax deduction when the money is put in to the voluntary contribution, unlike a TSP where you get a tax deduction for the money coming out of your payroll to go into the thrift. This is money out of your pocket that goes into a program administered by, I believe, OPM, and you put that money in. Once the money is in there, and this could almost be as quick as you put it in, you can move it into something called a Roth IRA. It's a direct transfer, so you don't have to make it do any tricks. If you remember, this is money that's got to go in there. So you might say, well, you know, I don't have a ton of, you know, pure cash to do it, but I have some money somewhere else where I've been saving. But if I take it out, I'd have to pay taxes on the earnings. I think it still makes sense. Now, I don't know anybody's numbers, so don't quote me that he said for everybody, but it might make sense even then to get the money out, pay the tax, and let it grow. Because once that's inside of the voluntary contribution program, it can go into a Roth IRA that would never be taxed. So
it's absolutely worth considering if one is thinking about going from the new plan, even with a matching TSP, back to the old plan, because all of a sudden now they have this unique opportunity to do 10% more of a contribution to the retirement fund for their entire career, if they have that kind of money.
That's right. But and I we bring this up because in class, I'll mention it in every class I go to, unless everybody clearly would not. If it's a first class, there's no sense talking about the VC because they'll just get mad. But there's usually 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes half the class is CSRS, and I say, let's devote a few minutes to this and have a 4-page handout that just gets to the basics very quickly. And, most people don't have 10% of their lifetime earnings sitting around, in a sock drawer saying, what do I do with it? But whatever it might be that you could, or maybe even borrowings. Now, borrowings have to be done with some economic guidance. It's not good to borrow money just to borrow money because it sounds good. It has to make sense to borrow money to make more money on it than you ever could have otherwise, because this money would never be taxed.
And oftentimes when a mistake like this is found on the threshold of one's retirement, remember that you leave your agency and you're sort of in this a little bit of a netherworld for a while. It's a period of adjudication that OPM has to verify the agency figures, your creditable service. This could be 3, 4, 5 months where they're sending you these retirement light checks. And during this point in time, you could technically be making voluntary contributions, and you might be getting a lump sum payment for unused vacation time. Mind you, taxes will be held out of that. But think about that. You have 400 plus hours of annual leave that you're going to be paid for. In some instances, you might be leaving with voluntary separation incentive pay associated with a buyout opportunity. In the Defense Department, those could be as high as Defense Department agencies, that can be as high as $40,000, $25,000. Otherwise, again, taxes are being withheld, but these are fairly substantial chunks of money that could be thrown at voluntary contributions, and you could even be doing it after you physically separate, but prior to the actual adjudication of your retirement paperwork by the Office of Personnel Management. So those are opportunities. And like you said, you don't have it in a sock drawer. But what's unique about voluntary contributions, or I should say what's more flexible about them, is that unlike thrift savings plan contributions, which have to be biweekly payroll withheld from your active employee check, this money could virtually come from almost anywhere, wherever you can get it. Because as you say, there's no, you pay the taxes as it goes in, much the same as you did for other contributions to the retirement system.
And this brings up other things as well. Some people would say, well, this is just for the elder folks. I'm surprised, though, at some of the folks that are in CSRS that I wouldn't think would be. Just visually, they look a lot younger than what you might think. We have this terrific source of questions that we get from this individual each week. Remain nameless and the like. And the individual sends something earlier this week, Bob, and it was an article in, I'm not sure, but I won't say who I think it is until I can remember who it was. The top 10, 9 TSP mistakes federal employees make, not having a TSP plan. And again, so we got TSP. If we haven't put money into that, probably it's because we don't have a ton of money that we could use to do the voluntary contribution program, but it feeds on itself. And it parallels, I think, to what we're talking about. And then parallel to that is, if you don't have money in the TSP, and I clearly understand where some people are saying, well, I can't afford to do it. Well, you can't afford, many of us can't afford to put 5% in, but I'd imagine most of us could squeeze the 1%, and then when we get more comfortable with that, we go to the next level. But there's no matching. Am I right with that, Bob? If you don't put money in, you don't get any match?
No, actually, if you're a FERS employee, the government gives you that 1% automatically of your income. In other words, they give right. you 1% of salary automatically. You'd have to be a federal employee for at least 3 years to be vested in that government contribution, but that comes to you automatically. You're technically only getting a 4% match on what you put in, dollar for dollar on the first 3%, 50 cents on the dollar for the next two. So that 1%, I mean, that's an automatic, based on what I understand, is automatic in FERS. And of course, FERS is the only folks who get the matching anyway.
Right.
So you would get that. But, you know, the challenge nowadays, and you raise a very good point, Bob. I mean, newer employees who are being hired are paying a lot more for the FERS retirement benefit, the pension benefit, than the earlier folks. Earlier folks are paying less than 1%. The people who were hired in 2014 or later are paying 4.4% for retirement FERS. Then, of course, you got to add to that 6.2% of most of the income for Social Security. So now you're looking at getting close to 11% coming out before you even attempt to put in that 5% magic number into TSP, which gets you eventually the whole 5% match that the government gives you. So it's definitely more daunting and challenging for newer folks to put huge amounts of money into TSP. Many of them don't really get there until they become empty nesters, and then all of a sudden they're flush with cash, and not only are they doing the entire elected deferral limit, which I think is $19,000 this year, but they're also doing the $6,000 catch up. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a challenge, particularly with the increased contribution now to FERS.
Well put. And I'm looking again at what our good friend sent in, having outstanding TSP loans. And if one of the comments I think I made earlier was, if we could fund our program by taking a TSP loan out, that's fine. But if we leave federal service, so if we're somewhat of a short timer, that loan's got to be paid within 90 days after leaving federal service. However, you know, economics are the focus here. So the economics would be, if I borrowed money to make more money, then I'm going to have to find some other way to pay that TSP loan back. And again, mm-hmm. what I'm talking about here, it wasn't really what Bob was focusing on earlier, maybe a little bit, but it was more the voluntary contribution as well. If we had a FERCA case, it might be borrowing money to get the money in there to get all those benefits, the lost benefits of not having the money in earlier. So this article, I believe, was in FedSmith, FedSmith. What else are we going to talk about? Not updating beneficiaries. I don't think that's an issue in what you and I are talking about. Understanding withdrawal options. I'm not so sure always everybody understands that. It's not that, you know, you and I teach this, Bob, so we're a little closer to it, but TSP withdrawal options are going to be enhanced in what, about another week?
Right, September 15th, the Modernization Act takes effect. You got it.
Okay,
big changes.
What I'm saying, for anybody listening, our focus was on FERCA, and I think we covered that pretty well, and then we got off on the voluntary contribution plan, but not to leave the FERS people out. There is opportunity within FERS, and it's another one of those examples. Be well-rounded. I'd like to say listen to this show only, but there are other shows, certainly not as good, people, you know, take advantage. And if you can go to a retirement seminar, I hope that it would be one of ours, but where we would like to be in all 50 states, and we travel an awful lot, where we can't cover everybody. But what was it? There was a commercial locally. The educated consumer is our best product, our best customer. And this is what we're doing today with educated individuals on the other side of the radio, and one side on this side, Bob, very educated, erudite individual. What does erudite mean, Bob?
I guess it means worldly, knowledgeable about. I use the term a lot, but I think it's certainly within a field. It means you kind of know what you're talking about.
Okay, so let's get back to a few more minutes of hopefully
FERCA.
Well, let's wrap up FERCA. I mean, we left FERCA about 15 minutes ago, but the point being here is, even if it's not going to impact 2% of the population, for the few that it does, the individuals listening could sometimes the FERCA people look like they would qualify because they have to have some age on them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and you know, I'd really direct this to people who have fairly lengthy careers, people who actually took service breaks of more than a year. If you've had, you know, did a bunch of things, but you know, you've got a lot of federal service and you're retiring now, you might want to, you know, take a look at that retirement coverage. And remember that You know, if you were hired, you know, long before FERS, and you had a fairly substantial chunk of time, 5 or more years under the old plan, when you were reinstated, you should not have been put in FERS without you making that election. You should have been in something called CSRS offset. Just take a good look. I mean, if your career has been, you know, uninterrupted and you were hired permanently before 1983, you should be in the CSRS plan. If you were hired on or after January 1st, 1984, in your first federal civilian job, there's no question you should be FERS. And there could be a situation where you had a service break and you might wind up in CSRS offset. Take a good look at it. If you haven't, you know, if you elected to be in FERS, this is another thing, and you had 5 or more years under the old plan, you actually have a component of service that's going to be figured using the old retirement formula rules. It's called frozen service. There are lots of ins and outs, but the critical nature of all of this is that if you find you have a mistake in your coverage and it's lasted for more than 3 years, you're obviously proceeding under some false assumptions regarding what your retirement's going to be worth, and it's really to your advantage to go through the FERCA process, to get the counseling, to have the comparison of one plan versus another that would be made available to you in most situations, and to pick the one based on your thinking, your financial planner's thinking, that would wind up giving you the best retirement package. After all, you need a lot of money to retire, and you want to have the best option, or the better of two options, and FERCA will give you that pretty much free of charge, because the agency that finds the mistake has to give you the counseling and pay those fees.
Well put, Bob. Eric says, you guys got to stop talking or you'll be talking to an empty mic. So, everybody, thanks for listening. Pass the words along, and we'll be back next week on another thought-provoking topic. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.
When we need help, we turn to government. When government needs help, they turn to Federal News Network.
Federal News Network.
For news on the federal pay raise.
To learn how other agencies handle IT modernization.
To see how Congress funds my agency.
For changes to my TRICARE benefits.
For the latest on my security clearance.
Federal News Network.
Federal News Network. Helping feds meet their mission.